Welcome to Corwin's Leaders Coaching Leaders podcast with host Peter DeWitt. This podcast is from education leaders for education leaders. Every week, Peter and our guests get together to share ideas, put research into practice, and ensure every student is learning, not by chance, but by design.
Hey, Ariel, how are you?
Good, Peter, how are you?
I'm doing well. It's, it's always a good day when I get to talk to Carol Radford.
Isn't it though?
It really is. Just like I said during the podcast or at the beginning that people will hear, I've known Carol for a few years now, and I actually wrote the foreword to one of her books. And just seeing her makes me smile, but she has so much good energy.
Yes.
And I think her heart and her research is in the right place for a very important topic, which is the focus of this podcast, which is mentoring.
Yes, that's right. I know. I love this focus on mentoring, and I know that listeners will pick up right away on what makes Carol's approach so different. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you a hint. It's the focus on students. And I love that. When I acquired her books, Mentoring in Action and The First Years Matter, that was something that stood out to me right away. And I thought, oh my gosh, we have to publish this. Like, this is, I've never seen this before. It just stood out to me as such a fantastic approach. And so I know everyone's going to enjoy hearing about that. But Carol, for those of you who don't know, she is the founder of Mentoring in Action, which is an organization dedicated to supporting novice teachers and their mentors. She's also a certified yoga teacher and integrates mindfulness into all of her work with teachers. And I think you'll definitely hear some of those threads of mindfulness coming through in the podcast too.
So looking forward to having everybody listen. Carol Radford, welcome to Leaders Coaching Leaders.
Thank you, Peter. I'm so honored to be here. I love talking with you, and it's been a while.
It has been a while, and you are just one of those people that when I see your face, I instantly smile.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
It's really great to have you on here. And, this season is focused on going from surviving to thriving for many reasons, obviously. And one of the things that we know, I mean, there's a lot of research lately that has shown, NASSP and EPI put out research that showed that 42% of principals who were surveyed considered leaving their job. I was reading research from about 5 years ago for school teachers that showed that 75% of them were saying that they were just overly anxious and burned out.
Yeah.
So we're talking about mentoring, but I want to talk about a few different things with you, because not only do you have like the companion books, Mentoring in Action and The First Years Matter, with an amazing foreword, by the way, in one of those, but you also have a new book out called Teaching with Light. So let's start with some of the basics. What is mentoring?
So, a lot of people define and describe mentoring in different ways. For me, and in the way I wrote those books, Mentoring in Action and The First Years Matter, I define mentoring as helping a teacher to be the most effective teacher he or she can be. So the conversations are purposeful and directed around student learning. It's like I bring the mentoring back to the students. And some books and paradigms that have existed before have been more models of helping, orienting, helping someone get comfortable at a school, showing people where the Xerox machine in the copy. That is not the definition that I'm using in the two books that I wrote, that you wrote the foreword for The First Years Matter. So for me, it's a mentoring conversation. It's purposeful. And the mentor actually is kind of building the roadmap for that novice to step into success, because that's how people stay in teaching. They feel confident and then they become competent. And sometimes those things, the mentor has to help with the confidence first and then the competence. And some people come in very competent, but have no confidence in front of kids when they actually get in front of kids. So the mentors have to differentiate. That's my definition, bringing it back to students. And that's how my books are focused.
Now, you've been at the university level. Is mentoring something that's been important because, like, pre-service teachers don't get what they need when they're in their university training? Or is it just that university training is going to do a lot of philosophy and, you know, you go through 8-16 weeks of student teaching and that's not enough? And mentoring is the piece where it's supposed to build the bridge between that university experience and then what they're going to do as an actual teacher. Is that where it's coming from?
That's so interesting that you asked the question that way, because I was a classroom teacher for 21 years, and then I worked in higher education for 21 years. I actually ended up in higher education because I felt the student teachers were coming to me as a teacher, as a cooperating teacher, and they didn't have those skills. So I was complaining a lot about what you're saying. Then I get the job in higher education as the director of student teaching, and I discovered how hard it was to actually fill those gaps. So I had to put my money where my mouth was. I was directing this program, and then I was discovering, oh my God, well, it's really hard to give them these mentoring experiences when they're not in the classroom on their own. And you wrote about this in your foreword. Mm-hmm. Your first 3 years of teaching, you were so excited to get your own classroom. You're ready. And then you get in front of the kids by yourself with no safety net from the university. And you're like, oh my God, this is really hard. Yeah. So I was thinking I could just have it happen at the university level. And more can happen there as well. Like when I worked in an alternative certification program, mm-hmm. at one university, I was training career changers. They were coming in from engineering. They didn't even know the language of teaching. Mm-hmm. So in higher education, the mentoring had to be the glossary of terms. They were mathematicians, engineers, some doctors, people going into teaching for very different reasons. They were older candidates. And if they couldn't get that mentoring, then it really was going to be a problem. They weren't going to stay. Mm. And we saw some of that. So in higher education, these alternative programs are the fast tracks, they call them sometimes, because people already have masters. Some people already have doctorates. Mm-hmm. So what is the practical stuff that you have to teach for someone to be actually successful in their own classroom? Well, you know the answer, Peter. It's pedagogy. It's relationships with the kids. You have to bring it up in conversations, and mentors have to know how to do that.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because you make it like I'm having flashbacks now. In fact, I actually, you know, from that foreword that I wrote, I actually last year officiated the wedding of two of my former first graders. They got married.
Wow. Oh my God, scary.
And one of them, the brother, his sister is getting married this year, and she asked me to officiate their wedding. So like, not only was I their teacher, now I'm the officiant of their weddings.
Oh my God.
But I think about, like, when I was a school principal, we were a professional development school, so we would have about 10 student teachers come in during a semester. And I remember there were so many times that I talked to them and I said, listen, we're going to meet on Wednesday mornings. You can ask me any question that you want. We mm-hmm. can talk about learning and those kind of things. I'm a principal. I might give you a different perspective. I am telling you, 2 people out of the 10 came. They just, right. they wouldn't do it. And I think, and I get it. They're intimidated, right?
Yes.
Undergraduates, they're,
yes.
I'm a scary principal. They're overwhelmed by everything they're doing. They might even be working. So when they go in and they actually get the job, the whole idea of mentoring mm-hmm. is really mm-hmm. important because, and you are specific about mentoring for 3 years.
Yes.
But before I get there, you had said something I want to go back to because you said something about the idea of like where the Xerox machine is.
Right.
In John Hattie's research, mentoring overall, like when he did the meta-analysis, and we know he's taking individual studies, putting them together, averaging the effect size, mentoring itself has a very low effect size.
Right.
Why is that? Why is mentoring have a low effect size? And what are your books doing about it?
So I think where the disconnect is for this mentoring research is the way the questions are being asked. So, and who's responding? Because when you think of mentoring, novices think of a person at their school that was nice to them, that talked to them. They're not going to go in and talk to the principal, you're right, because that's too high stakes. They want to either get a job if they just got it, or if they're student teaching, they want to apply, and the confidence level isn't there. I'm thinking the mentoring research isn't capturing what I'm hoping my books do, the connection to proficiency and evaluation and success on your educator evaluation. Mm-hmm. So back to confidence and competence. Mm-hmm. The thing, mentoring's goal should be to have the teacher be proficient. Now, principals have the role in that, but it's through supervision. Yeah. So the mentoring is less, so I didn't define about the confidential colleague piece. That's a piece of the mentoring that you can trust the person that's coming into your classroom to help you fix what's the mistake is before Peter comes in as the principal and sees what you're doing wrong and then assesses you and give you a bad evaluation. So the way that I framed my books month by month, the real goal is preparing this teacher to be successful on the ed evaluation, which means that the conversations have to be go beyond orientation conversations. And I think the research really, sometimes that's what programs do, like induction is not mentoring. Yeah. Induction are the activities that the district does to introduce the teacher to those orientation things and the district and all of that. Whereas mentoring, in my definition, or where I saw the gaps in the teacher success from higher ed, is in the classroom proficiency. Mm-hmm. So that's why my books are focused on classroom practice. Yeah, of course, there's other conversations and you want people to be happy and social life and all of that. But that's why I think it's getting lower marks, is because that's really not going to help somebody be a better teacher, that they know where the restaurants are in town and where the ladies' room is. That's orientation. So I think it's that definition isn't being asked. And is there a mentoring curriculum in your district? And new teacher Santa Cruz has always done research that's shown mentoring is high. You know, visible learning is really about classroom practice. That's the research I used to develop these mentoring experiences, is how do you have a purposeful conversation about something that's happening in your classroom? That's what mentoring really is or should be. Does that make sense?
What do you think of that? And I appreciate that very much, because I do appreciate the fact that you went by the month-by-month mentoring. And I have to be honest, when you just said that about a teacher coming, your mentor coming in to, you know, see you teach and all of those things, in the years that I had a mentor, and many of us who were public school teachers had mentors the first year or two, I never had my mentor. My mentor never came in to watch me teach.
Interesting. Interesting.
What's so yes. good about your book and your yes. research is that you're giving. Because lots of times, like, a mentor might be just a veteran teacher as opposed to the best teacher to be the mentor, right? It's more along the lines of, you get a stipend, so you're going to be the mentor. And that doesn't always equate to you're getting the best mentor. And I think that's what's also good about what you're saying, is that it's about being more proactive, not reactive.
Exactly.
It's not we have a new teacher come in. Holy yes. cow, Carol, you have to be the mentor. It's
right.
Okay, we have new teachers coming in. Now, what is a mentoring program going to look like? And who right. do you want to be right. mentors? Because it's about growing our teachers, right? It's right. not about, I mean, so many times principals will say they hire new teachers, and they don't necessarily look at those new teachers as somebody that they're going to help grow. They look at it as, no, they interviewed for the job, they've got to do well in the classroom. And I think I think is also really great about what you're saying is the confidence and competence. That's a beautiful way of saying it, because I know that from the self-efficacy research, you know, Bandura's research shows that self-efficacy is how we are confident in our own abilities, but that confidence is context specific. So I might be really good at building relationships with my students, but I'm not so good at using different instructional strategies. And what you said, that confidence, that confidence leading to competence is so important, because a mentor's role, at least what I take from your books and from your research, a mentor's role is to understand self-efficacy, understand curriculum, instructional strategies, that kind of stuff, and blend those together in the relationship they build.
All of that. And the other thing, and we'll get in, I'll give you kind of my three elements that I think are critical for leaders if you're designing a mentoring program. But what I want to say to build on is the best classroom teacher sometimes is not the best mentor.
Right.
And but they need to be good teachers to be mentors, because it's about purposeful and mindful conversations with intention. And that intention, I believe, has to be aligned to the standards. So that anytime you're having a a real mentoring conversation, it's the novice teacher should know which standard you're talking about. They should know how this looks in the classroom. And the mentor should be able to talk about it and demonstrate it, actually, too. So the leaders who are developing programs, if you, what you're saying to me, so if I have to say three things that are really important for a leader when they're setting up a program, I do want to say more than 1 year, because you had asked that question. My books, the first years matter. Years. That's the second edition. When I first wrote the book, it was the first year matters.
Yeah.
And just to change that S to a second edition is from what you wrote in your foreword for that book. It's like it takes multiple years.
Well, thank you for that. And I, you know, part of that research comes from Helen Timperley, does a lot of great work out of Australia in professional learning. And she so shows that, you know, professional learning and development need to be over multiple years. It's not just a one and done. It's not just a workshop. It's over.
Yes.
So that's why also I appreciate the fact that in your book, you do have first years matter, because, and you talk about it being like a 2 to 3 year process, because, and I think that's a wonderful, I think it's an important way of looking at that. So
and
what
I think
are the,
that shift
so the
costs money. So the, here's the number one element. The work I've been doing for 40 years, you have to train your mentors. You can't just do what you just said. Here, so-and-so is coming in. You're a great teacher. You got great on your ed eval. I'm matching you up. And it can't just be about the stipend. There has to be a required preparation and support. Lots of districts, they buy both of these books, because the books that I created line up to the standards. I show how every state could take their state standard and do a crosswalk in the book month by month. And that's where these conversations, because all the standards are pretty much the same in all 50 states. We might say they're a little different, but there's classroom management and curriculum and so forth. So all these conversations. But here's the real, the rubber meets the road is when the mentor knows what they're doing. It has to be prep. So when they read these books, and then I've designed courses online for them to take, they go in deep and understand more than a teacher, more than being an effective teacher. What they're understanding is how to take that and talk to someone else about that. Yeah. So that preparation, critical, month by month, support groups for mentors, if that's the only money that people had in the district, you get the biggest bang for the buck. If the 20 mentors in the district are well prepared, the principal just has to check in, and it spreads. And then the second thing I want to just reiterate about the standards, it's like keeping the conversation about the standards, because here's the deal. A lot of mentees don't want to be mentored. They came from other careers. They think they know what they're doing. I don't have time for mentoring. I've got my own problems in the classroom. I've got these kids. They don't want the mentor to know they don't know what they're doing. Some of these people had doctorates from MIT. They couldn't contain the kids in the classroom in these alt-cert programs. So did they didn't want to be embarrassed. So the confidential mentor who knows all this can then go in and prepare the principal for that principal's evaluation, and it's all alignment. And if it's aligned to the standard, you get buy-in from all the mentees, because then it's not a, oh, I have to go to a mentoring meeting, and now I have to go to evaluation meeting, and now I have to a coaching meeting. No, it's all one. Mentoring for success means the mentor is supporting the school mission and the district standards and the whatever. And then it's all blended. So those two. And then the third is about differentiation. Every mentor, here's the thing. You know, Peter, all the new teachers are different. Some come in, they're sharp. They come in from another district. They don't need the one-on-one. They could pass in a group. They could do something. They could do less. Then you've got somebody comes in, doesn't have any classroom management. They need one-on-one. I believe in mentor leadership. So developing a layer of leadership mentors, so it's not just you're a mentor, you're just helping one-on-one. No, there's an infrastructure of mentor leaderships. These leaders actually prepare and support the other mentors. And guess what? They're a partner with the principal. So the principal just ties into the leader. They work together, and then they differentiate. So you've got a group of people who don't need the one-on-one. They go into a group mentoring process. It saves money in the district. And guess what? It goes to the need. So now you've got buy-in, because now you're explaining your mentoring program to these novices. Like, this is going to help you keep your job. Oh, you've got my attention. This isn't just like an extra little thing you have to do because the state says you have to do it, right? Differentiating and problem solving, just what you said. They didn't go to your meetings because you were the principal. If the teacher leader did the meeting, all 10 of them would have showed up. Yeah. So these ideas in the problem solving groups, and a lot of this stuff is on my website, mentoringinaction.com. I have videos of how a mentor even leads the meeting. Yeah. So is that making sense to you?
It does.
As a former principal, am I hitting
that? Besides the fact that you just said that, you know, I'm the principal, that's why they didn't show up for me.
It's true.
I'm a little upset with that one, but that's okay.
You're not. You know that's true, right?
Well, you know, it's funny.
A little bit.
I always felt like, that's why I talk so much about status, that principals have status, because I didn't see myself as the principal. I mean, I was the principal. I get that.
Right. But
I had been an adjunct professor. So when I was working, when I have 10 people come in and we're a professional development school, I was like, you know what? It makes sense to meet with the principal. Like,
yes.
What do I look for? What do we should be doing in the classroom? That kind of stuff. So yeah, it was just, it makes sense that they're not going to show up because I'm the principal. And honestly, there were probably 2 out of the 10 each time that would come in and ask deeper questions. And they were the ones that were always, like, I could see they were ready. They were ready to,
right,
you know,
right,
apply for jobs. They were ready to get into classrooms. And I right. think that's important. You were talking about alt cert. And I know I work with a lot of schools that are experiencing emergency certified. And I feel like what you're also talking about here is that the given is that we have emergency certified teachers in this, whatever school we're in. Uh-huh. Like, it's our school district, we have emergency certified teachers, and it's not always great, but we have it. It sounds like what you're saying is that let's just acknowledge the fact that we've got emergency certified teachers, and there might not be something we can do about that right now. But what we can do is make sure that our mentoring program is going to connect well with those emergency certified
yes.
teachers
yes.
by giving them the necessary elements that they need.
Yes.
Does that sound?
That's great. And I think as a principal, you could tap leaders to run mm-hmm. those groups. I think that differentiated support for the novices can be actually developed through the leadership of the lead mentors, because they're closest to what the needs are. The confidence piece is a piece, and then the competence, just what I was saying, but it gets, there are different entry points for novices to enter into it. So what I suggest are problem solving groups, and you just run them and see who shows up, because they will show up. So if you're having problem with classroom management and Mrs. Jones is leading that, and that's, this can be done online, can be done on the phone, it doesn't even have to be in the school, it physically, and you throw out an article, and the problem solving is how to pass out papers without the kids going crazy. Very specific. We don't call it classroom management. That's the topic, but then one specific skill that's in the standards, I always go back to the standards, that a novice could develop, because in these alternative certification programs, there isn't time for this kind of teaching. And then what happens is the culture of the school starts to break down, because the veteran teachers are looking around going, what the heck? Who are these people that are coming into our school and they don't know how to teach? But if you take it head on, you use the books, you use the curriculum, you prepare all the mentors with one common language. That's what I like about my books. Yeah. I taught. This is the language of teachers. When teachers read my books, they're like, wow, you get it.
Yeah,
that's the kind of book it is. It's not a philosophy book. Right. And I can do that too. I can do the principles and all of that. But that's not what that's needed right now. Because the bottom line is, yes, these are alternative route teachers, but some of them are stellar. Their content, we want to retain them if possible. We don't want this to be an open door, because it costs money to keep hiring teachers every 2 years.
Then resources beyond money.
Right. Fine. Mentoring, if that's the only thing people hear that are listening to this, you can save a lot of money by investing in the best teachers at your school to be mentors, who can have conversations, who can be prepared to mentor. And I believe a lot of people that, oh, so-and-so's a lousy mentor. That I say, well, how did you prepare her? Oh, well, we didn't prepare her. She's a good teacher.
Threw her into it, and that's, yeah.
Yeah, that isn't it.
You know, I think one of the things that you said, too, that was really important, especially now with COVID and all that, is people are looking for practical. And I appreciate that out of your books, because they are.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember in the throes of last summer doing a webinar, if you were too philosophical, you were done.
Right.
They needed to be practical. They needed to know, what can I do today?
Yes. Yes.
Tomorrow.
I agree. Yes.
You have a new book out called Teaching with Light. How does it intersect with like school leadership and mentoring?
Yes.
And how do they intersect with each other?
So here's the deal, like what we're really talking about, the big need, and it was shown during COVID, are the social and emotional skills of teachers. So for the last decade, we have been asking teachers to do those skills with students we're just starting now to focus on the social and emotional skills of teachers. And this is their own well-being. And we saw this last year. I started writing this book actually a couple of years ago. And it's called Teaching with Light, 10 Lessons for Finding Wisdom, Balance, and Inspiration. And really what this book is, are 10 of my teaching stories, some, you know, where I had to be resilient. And my top 20 books of all time that are still on my bookshelf, because I'm still a teacher. So I've been teaching for over 40, almost 50 years. I started at 20 years old, right? And this book is about well-being and promoting it, being proactive. So it's more than SEL. It's more, that's very important, and that's an entry point into this book. But this book has my stories and I read my stories. And then I've interviewed 10 teachers that are currently in the classroom. Mm-hmm. And then I interviewed 10 leaders who left the classroom. Mm-hmm. And why I wanted people that left is because I wanted this book to be about sustaining a career in education, mm-hmm. not just the classroom. Because you became a principal, I ended up working in higher education. We're not the bad guys. We're all trying to build a community of educators. And I think when people leave and go into Department of Ed jobs and publishing jobs, we get the voice of a teacher infiltrating everywhere. And I think that's better than having a public policy person who never was in the classroom.
I agree with you.
So that's my book. It's so good, Peter. You're going to love it. It's so good. And you're going to want to see my top 20 books.
That I do not doubt at all. So Carol, as we wrap up, I just really want to thank you for being on the Leaders Coaching Leaders podcast. You know, you mentioned in part of your subtitle, it's inspiration. Every time I talk to you, I feel inspired. I do. It's just so good to see you. And thank you for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Peter. It's been a pleasure. I love talking about mentoring, and that's so great to see you.
So good to talk to Carol. I love listening to her talk about mentoring and, you know, the idea of creating that system of support is just so strong. I think there's a lot of our authors are super in touch with teachers and their students and everything, but I'm just reminded every time we talk to Carol of how in tune she is with what's going on in schools and the support that new teachers need. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, her energy is amazing. And yeah. She's like that all the time. That wasn't just podcast. You know, that was she is like that in person. And what I really enjoy is that she is taking a topic that sadly in many schools is still a reactive way of approaching new teachers, which is mentoring. It's kind of like, we've got 4 new teachers. We need mentors. Let's just grab.
Yeah.
And she's really given a proactive approach, and her books really give that, you know, she talked about it in the podcast, that month by month piece, which I think is really important as well. And she mentioned the visible learning research. And I think that was important because a lot of times mentoring is about how to stay out of the way of the principal, where the union meets, the Xerox machine. And she's talking about, no, it needs to be aligned to the standards. It needs That's to right. be aligned to the curriculum. And I really like that she also talked about confidence versus competence, because that's a big topic, especially when we're talking about self-efficacy. So yeah, a lot of great nuggets that she offers. And I know her books are very, very practical.
Yeah. Yeah. So her books are Mentoring in Action, The First Years, plural, Matter. And her newest book is called Teaching with Light, that just came out this year. And it's absolutely gorgeous. I hope everyone listening goes and picks up a copy, because you just have to see it and appreciate all of the light and energy that you heard coming from Carol in this interview. You will see coming through in her books as well. So I hope that everyone enjoys that.
Yeah. And I really, one of the things that I probably wish I talked more about was the intersection of mindfulness, especially when you're working with new teachers, because we know that people are feeling very stressed and anxious these days. And, you know, as you know, Ariel, because you're my editor and we've worked on this with Collective Leader Efficacy, that mindfulness piece is really important for people to kind of, let's start acknowledging the fact that we need to take a step back and breathe. And so I really enjoy the fact that Carol focuses on that quite a bit in her work.
Yeah. Well, thank you everyone again. Enjoy your day wherever you are listening to this. And please remember to leave us a review on wherever you listen to your podcasts.